Na 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 na. Hey! Gotta love that podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey! Yeah, I love that podcast show. Oh, BS and beer is the place to go to get all the Saints news. Hell yeah! Podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey! Gotta love that podcast show. Na na.
Now, recording live, it's the BS and Beer Podcast crew with your host, David Romero.
Welcome in another week, another edition. It's the BS and Beer Podcast crew recording live, wall-to-wall New Orleans Saints football talk from our studios at the Meat House. Oh, boy. I have a rant. I don't know if it goes in now or if it goes in later, but first I'm just going to say we have Heath Elson, we have Craig Wright, and we have Dale Mims with us this week. And the Saints, I mean, I think at one point it was 23. Here goes my rant. I'm tired of coming in here and doing this show and off the bat explain to everybody, don't get too worked up because this really wasn't the Saints. And I still mean it. But how do you have a show? How do you feel the team when what are the talking points? What are we going to talk about? Are we going to talk about how we can talk about these guys who just showed up and were signed the day of the game? We can talk about how they were equipping guys with uniforms and equipment prior to the game. We could talk about the first actual physical practice besides a walkthrough they had. Ian Book had a chance to throw the ball to the receivers was prior to the game. You simply cannot, I literally don't know how to do a show. I literally don't know how to do a show when we can't sit here and say that Ian Book, he was garbage. Or Ian Book, listen, he really showed some potential because, quite frankly, he had no offensive line. There was no blocking. Who knows if he would have performed better or if he would have done the same things had there, you know, maybe the line would have looked better. But you have no idea. There's such an enigma. There's so much that you can't actually identify.
Hey, folks. All right, listen, I'm so not in the mood for you guys. You're blabbering on and on, okay? And it's enough, all right? It's enough. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, today's Monday, all right? So stop doing your stupid radio thing. And if you want to pick up where you left off tomorrow, at least it'll be Tuesday, all right? So just keep it down. Actually, don't keep it anything. Just stop, okay? Just stop doing what you're doing.
I'm going to start off with you, Heath. And I'm going to start off in general that I found out just on Tuesday that the Saints had a virtual walkthrough on, I believe it was Friday. And that was the only physical practice that I'm not sure. I wasn't able to clarify if it was what they were allowed to do or what they felt was best to try to avoid any further outbreak, but they had one virtual walkthrough. The first time Ian Book really got to throw to the receivers, I said a virtual, an actual physical walkthrough. The first time he threw to receivers at full speed, was right before the game.
Yeah. Yeah, they came out 10 minutes early and threw a few passes around.
I coach a little league team. That was
the extent of preparation.
Yeah. I coach a little league team. We do more preparation than that.
Yeah, this week we literally had the Sandlot version. You know, when you was a kid, whoever was playing quarterback would take his finger on his stomach and go, you go up here and do 5 yards and go out. You know, I think that's what we were doing yesterday because, you know, they actually mentioned during the game when they talked about how they had come out early and did some passes. And he said something about, I believe he said it was because they were in COVID protocols that they couldn't really do anything. Now, I don't know if he meant the NFL mandated they couldn't do anything or the team was trying to make sure that they didn't contaminate anybody else and wind up having more guys, you know, scratched off right before the game or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I'll wait a little while. We'll talk a little bit before, but I mean, I could rant on for days and days and days about the idiocy of this entire process. And you know, you can put this one on the NFL completely.
I'll give you your opportunity, Heath. You came to the right place today. Next up, Craig, how you doing today, Craig?
You know what? I've been better, to be honest with you.
I mentioned before the show started that I kind of made a comment that there were people who literally thought the Saints had a chance to win. Now, a rookie fourth round draft pick. No, not just that. You had guys starting. I've never heard of them. I for years did this for a living. And now we do this more as a hobby. We do it for fun, but I follow the Saints probably closer than just about, you know, probably any media person. Didn't know who these guys were. They just signed them off the street and they were starting on the offensive line for us. And I thought to myself, there are people who literally thought we could win like this and then find out that they weren't practicing. So that tells me that players don't matter. You could take us four in this group and put them on the field, and then we'd still have a shot to beat anybody, right?
To be fair, I do have a helmet right here.
I know you would probably be the closest. The desk. Go, please tell me something. Give me some thoughts here.
You know, you kind of made the same joke already, but I was watching the game with my family, and my dad points out a player and says, "Oh, who's what number is that? Who is that guy?" And I go, "I have no idea." And he goes, "Oh, that's not a good sign."
Right.
And that's all it is. I mean,
and he obviously knows you. So he knows if you don't know who the guy is.
I mean, they signed the guy the same day he plays. I mean, that's semi-pro Bush League amateur ball. I mean, you talk about how complex these offensive schemes are and how deep Sean Payton's playbook is and all the things it requires to play in that offense. Not in just an NFL offense. Forget the Saints offense and being as fancy as it's just to play in an offense like that. Having never been on the field to practice that offense. I mean, when could these guys have even gotten the playbook just to read it? I mean, if they're only, you're not going to just give a Noba-ame your playbook in case you end up not signing him to go somewhere else. And then, you know, give them someone else the keys. So these guys you sign same day, they read the plays the same day. And I know people are sitting at home like, oh, you know, it's just offensive line. You just push the guy in front of you. Yeah. Nah. Not so much, guys. If you watch that game, there were guys stepping down when they needed to be stepping out. We have a fan block going on one side when we need to be crashing in. You got a down lineman going unblocked, where trying to pick up backers. And you can't win games like that. It's, you know, and but it's not our team. Like, what do you want to do?
Yes, and I keep reiterating. It's like, we're going to sit here. Are we seriously going to analyze? I don't even know the guy's name who played left tackle. Am I really going to sit here and analyze and breakdown of how it affected, you know, other than Dell? I heard before the game, they were equipping the new guys. If most people don't understand, generally speaking, now this sort of new is they sign guys to the practice squad. Then after they become acclimated and they get them to the point where, okay, look, they know the playbook. Then you bring them up from the practice squad to the regular squad 53. And then they make them active. Well, no. They took, if I'm not mistaken, five guys. They signed them to the practice squad, then immediately brought them to the roster. They couldn't have possibly known the playbook, giving them mouthpieces and getting their helmet sized prior to the game.
Yeah, I'm sure they got all of this stuff. Like the same time they got the directions to the stadium.
And, yes.
And everything like this. Like, I mean, but are you really surprised? NFL screwing the Saints, like, I mean, that's never happened before, you know. But yeah, every time it happens to us, I mean, we just see it happen, and we're amazed that no one else is just pointing this out, like, these guys really got screwed.
Okay, so yeah, I'm gonna open the floor up for this discussion, because there's a part of me that wants to defend the NFL and say, listen, well, what are they supposed to do? Are they supposed to move the game back? And Heath, I'm going to start with you, because I know that you're just chomping at the bit to get some of these opinions out. What are they supposed to do? I mean, look, it's Monday night game already. Are they supposed to play this game on Wednesday? And now, okay, you play on Wednesday, you get some players back, but then you got to turn around and play on Sunday again. So is it better just to get it out of the way now? Because, okay, Heath and I were talking. Schedule-wise, statistically, I guess the Saints have like a 36% chance of winning. But if you look at who has to win and who has to lose, the Saints actually have a very good opportunity to still get in the playoffs. So do we want to move that game to Wednesday and then play again on Sunday? Go ahead, Heath.
Yeah, well, as far as moving the game, you know, I don't know how many players that would have affected, right? With the policy that's in place of 10 days, then, you know, so at what point did the – player A go out and when, you know, so even by pushing it back 2 days, I don't know how many, if any, that would have cleared to come back by the time it was ready for the game. My complaint goes back to the fact that the policy even exists to begin with. Okay. And that's where my issue comes in, is that we are taking young guys, not a single one of which over the last 2 years that we've had COVID going on has had any significant implications from nobody's come close to dying. Nobody's even been dramatically sick from COVID. And the reason is because these are young, healthy guys in tip-top shape. If anybody out there is going to survive COVID, it's professional athletes, okay, and college-age athletes and everything, and young people in general, okay? And then now we find out, and, you know, we have some movement now because, you know, asymptomatic people are not spreading this virus. And the NFL's own medical officer said this before this game even took place.
Right.
Okay, that asymptomatic people are not spreading this disease. Now the CDC has basically come out and said the same thing, and they're shortening their
to 5 days.
Their recommendation of, you know, which is still, it's almost the CDC just can't come out and say, you know, fully, they're not spreading it. And so if they're asymptomatic, don't worry about it. Because they have people to answer to who still, you know, have a different
pushing on a agenda. Different agenda. Yeah. Right.
But the bottom line is, you know, they had already said they weren't going to test vaccinated asymptomatic players. So I'm not sure why some of these guys ever even had a test administered on them. Okay. Then on top, you know, so anyway, my point is it goes back before any decision about postponing the game or, it should never have happened to begin with is my contention.
So the interesting thing, and I don't know how much I want to go into the COVID thing, cause I don't know anybody if necessarily experts on it, but there were a lot of people, fans who were saying, hey, let's get it out now, because there has been a huge increase in the amount of players who are going to the COVID list. And they're like, well, if the Saints make the playoffs, and I guess it's one of those fun things to think about, Craig, if the Saints go through theirs now and get into the playoffs, can you imagine that we face, you know, Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers and Adams and all their best players are out and we somehow or another get to the Super Bowl? You know, I don't know if I want to win it like that, but I'll probably still celebrate.
I mean, we played pretty well against all them when they were healthy in week one too.
Yeah.
Throwing that out there. I think Heath nails it. If you delay the game, you play it on Wednesday, then you know, you have a better shot of beating the Dolphins, but you got a worse shot of beating the divisional opponents that are actually going to affect our playoff shot. And I had said this last week, and I know we've talked about it personally, that this, if we were going to lose one of the last three games, this was the one to lose. You know, it's an AFC team. It's not going to affect our division or conference record, any of that. All we really need now is to win out, and we need a little bit of help. I think Rams beat the Niners in week 18 or something like that.
Well, there's a little bit more to it, and we can actually, matter of fact, after you finish this, let's talk about it. But go ahead and finish your thought.
But I think
here,
that's the point, is that we want to be really upset about the NFL shafting us, and they did, and they will, and that's just our lot in life. But it hasn't killed us. It hasn't ruined our playoff chances, you know. What was I saying the other day? Is this is basically just an extra bye week to get our important players healthy and get them rested and get them fresh so that we can beat up on the Panthers. Now,
Dale, I already feel like I'm beating this dead horse, but I mean, it's pretty much the all encompassing subject is just the fact that this game should have never been played. I would also like to be a little bit and defend and say, I hate when people tell you that you should do something, but don't offer a solution. So my point is, I'm going to take the side of, yeah, it should never be played, but honestly, I don't know what the solution would have been. So unless you can give us the solution, so now we can turn around and fully blast the NFL, I don't know what they expect us to do. But I mean, it was just, the game was it was literally a joke, you know, and at first look, even I knew there's no way, but you had that little small piece of hope. What if we, this miracle thing that somehow book exceeds, you know, but look, after the game started, you realize, dude, this is a joke. This is embarrassing. I was worried about Kamara getting hurt.
Absolutely. Especially like late in the game, like, why are we even giving him a ball? Please sit down.
Yes.
and so, but yeah, I have that problem as well. I've got that scale in my head, you know, of the Tomas. I'm really optimistic. We're going to win the Super Bowl all the way down to heat the blow everything up, fire everybody. You know, this is terrible. Yeah, so every game, I have just that little bit of optimism. Maybe that's what makes me, you know, tune in and watch intently. And, you know, I sync up my TV with WWL radio so I can listen to Deuce. You know, like I do all of this because I seriously love this team. And, you know, maybe this is why I have that little bit of optimism. But, yeah, you're right. Once you start watching it, yeah, I mean, reality sets in.
yeah. And I try my best, and I have to apologize to the guys, because when I just get my mindset, like, just don't get frustrated, then the jokes start coming in. But Craig never has that button of, you know, Craig's like, you shut your whore mouth. You know, it's like, and he says it in text, but you can hear it kind of, you can feel the spit on your face as he's saying it, you know.
So yeah, I think I'm much more aggressive than I actually am.
No, nah, man, you're a great dude. I would hope. I'm just saying that because you're so huge and I don't want you to ever do anything.
I'm like 4'10. And this is a deceptive camera.
All right. Let's see here. Well, while y'all were talking, I was trying to pull up the playoff simulator and I didn't get a chance to. So I may be wrong on some of this stuff. But off the top of my head, next week, the Vikings are important, and the Vikings need to lose one of the next two games. The last week of the season, they play the Packers. Next week, they play another team that they should lose to, and I can't think of who it is. I think it's the Rams, maybe. One of the big important games is the Rams versus the 49ers in the last week of the season. And looking at things, matter of fact, the 49ers just lost Garoppolo. So while they'll still be a solid team, I don't think that they're going to win out because they have two pretty hard games, and all they need to do is lose one. Now, keep in mind, the Saints need to win the next two games, and that's no guarantee. And forget about all this. We'll get all these players back.
And Philadelphia's got to lose twice.
No, they don't.
We're a game behind them, and we're down a tiebreaker to them from a head-to-head
but matchup. Two teams can win. Two teams can get in, and Philadelphia and the Saints can get in.
There's three wild card spots now, right?
Yes. But what I'm saying is I think one is pretty much you're not getting all the way up to the –
Right. Well, it's the Cardinals. They have 10.
Yes. So nobody's touching the Cardinals. So when I say that, I mean that more in the sense of there are two available, if that's even the right way to say it, wild cards. So the point is that there are several different options where Philadelphia and the Saints are both in. So I sent that that simulator.
Minnesota's at Green Bay.
Huh?
Minnesota's at Green Bay.
Okay, so Minnesota's at Green Bay this week.
Well, that's good. If it was the last week of the season, Green Bay.
Yes, then you have to worry about that a little bit. But now here's the other thing. If I remember correctly, all the division leaders are all like they have the same record. So at some point, they're not all going to be able to shut it down if they think that they have a chance to get that number one spot, that first seed, which means a bye. But if anybody has the standings in front of them, Dale, it sounds like you had them open.
I was looking at my fantasy league.
but if you look at the schedule or the standings, you'll see that all the division leaders, I think they're like they all have three losses. They're all there.
The Packers are at 12-3 by themselves.
Okay, and so then
the Cowboys, Rams, and Buccaneers are all at 11-4, and then the Cardinals at 10-5.
Yeah. Okay. So. I don't have the simulator in front of me, but the point is that I did it several different ways because I could tell that you were like, dude, why are you still talking playoffs? And I'm like, look, I'm not trying to be Mr. Optimistic here. I'm just telling you that if the favorites win.
No, I was only going by the statistics they gave in the game.
Yeah.
I haven't investigated it myself. They had it at 34%. And then you went and did it and you didn't see where they were coming up with the 34%. I think the one variable you may not have been missing.
Uh-huh.
They may not be assuming that the Saints are going to be favored in the next two games.
Oh,
was the missing variable I thought about.
See, that was my argument. I didn't even think about it because I'm thinking of everything from the perspective of the Saints went out and all we need is, and then like, okay, let's just forget about the Saints having to actually win two games in a row.
Yeah, against, that's the thing.
Against teams that aren't very good, but at the same time, listen,
two teams that we've already lost to.
And that's the point. Teams we've lost to, and quite frankly, the Saints, yes, their defense keeps them and everything, but let's not act like the Saints' defense has not at times not shown up completely. They might play okay, But the thing about it is this offense needs you to be dominant. This offense needs you to, if Carolina somehow scores 17 points, you're going to have a hard time beating them. And Atlanta can absolutely score 17 points on you. The Saints offense.
We've beaten Atlanta with Taysom Hill before, though.
No, and we have. We have. But we just recently lost Atlanta with a, I don't know. Again, it goes back to, I know we can. That's not the argument. Matter of fact, all this playoff talk is based on the fact that we win in two games. Having said that, I don't. If anyone sits here, I know nobody's going to sit here and argue like, oh, it's a given. There's no way the Saints are going to lose those two games. I just don't believe that. And now with the way this season is going, who knows what's going to be the next thing? It's like, oh man, we look at this report, man. We even got Turner back, man. We got our two tackles. There's a hurricane on its way. It should arrive right about Sunday. And
we take that seriously down here, Dave. Come on now.
Huh?
We take that seriously down here.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying it. Don't act like it can't happen. It's like, well, it never happens this time of year. Oh, here it is. You know? So the point is that who knows what could happen? So I don't know, but I don't have the confidence that the Saints are just going to automatically win those games. Although I believe they can beat either one of those two games. There's no question here, but I'm just trying to talk playoffs. Dale, you look anxious. Tell me something. Give me some news.
I mean, I'm looking at the simulator here. This got, Philadelphia projected for the seventh seed and San Francisco for the sixth.
So. I don't care for your attitude at all. Who else got some better news than that? Heath, I'm sure you got something positive to tell us.
No, okay. I mean,
so Heath, here's the worst case scenario. The Saints do win out, and don't make the playoffs. And then the whole thing about like, God, we could get us a much better draft pick and listen, I'd like to clarify. Mm-hmm. I'm not one of those people who talk about tank. I'm not talking about tanking. I'm talking about when you put Ian Book and a bunch of random people, I can't even tease them because I don't know their names. Apparently on Twitter, 57, who's 57, couldn't fall on the ball. And nobody even knew his name. They were just calling him 57, and calling him a fat dude. You know, it's like, so you're not even like, oh man, remember how we used to pick on like Bond? Like, oh, Bond, he can't play. At least we knew his name. He's like, hey, that fat guy wearing 57 sucks. You know, it's like, what are you supposed to do?
Yeah. No love for linemen. That's a lineman physique is what that is.
Yeah. You know, I say that all the time. It's like, I don't really sit around wanting to tank, but it's like we get in these situations where I know the odds are, right? The 3-7-9 seasons in a row, you know, I could go on and on. It's like you're right there. And if you go for it and you come up short, you know, you wind up with a worse draft pick and everything, you know, the only way you could ever know, right? It'd have to be hindsight. You'd have to be able to see the future. And it's like, but if we're going to lose out here and not make the playoffs, I'd just as soon lose all of the rest of them and try to. But honestly, I don't even know if that makes a difference because we'll turn around and draft another Ruiz or.
Oh boy.
Are we going to trade up?
Yeah, we're going to trade two picks and get another Davenport or Peyton or somebody that's going to sit on a bench.
Hey, 16 games of Davenport would be worth two first round picks.
Hey, Davenport. Davenport's been a beast, and so has Cam Jordan.
Even 16 games over two or three seasons would be worth it.
Oh, easy now. Let's not get carried away. Craig, I'm going to start off with you. Cesar Ruiz, go.
Ruiz is a fantastic center. I was a big fan of his coming out of college. My wife's family is from Michigan, so I watched a lot of his games in college. Gets the second level really well, very agile. He's not a guard. You know, and he's making a hard transition with limited off seasons because of COVID. Whether you agree with those rules or not, that's completely irrelevant because that's the situation we're dealing with. Every other team's dealing with it too. So it's not right for us to just blame everything on that. But he has a lot of potential. He's quick. He can engage well. I think there are some issues with him. Not necessarily understanding the playbook, but dealing with stunts and changes and things that aren't as natural for him because playing it at center is just it's a different animal. You know, I was a center for years. I've played guard, but it's very different. You're kind of in charge at center. You're dictating protections. You're telling guys where to go. And once you move to guard, you're being told where to go. And, you know, the blocking itself is very similar, but knowing what to do is very different. And I think a lot of his problems aren't necessarily being overpowered. I think they're cerebral problems. They're not knowing where to turn your hips and get to the guy who's lined up outside of you. It's not knowing which, you know, there's a blitzer coming, so I'm going to stay in and help until he gets here. I'm watching for backside. It's just a different position. And, you know, we talk a lot about McCoy and how great he is at center. Heath was telling me, I didn't even know this, that McCoy was only a center for 1 year in college, but he's a fantastic center at this level. So I'm not ready to move him out of that spot because he's good at it. And we don't know that Ruiz is going to be good at it at the next level. So it's tough to know what to do with him. I mean, you hope he develops, you hope we find a spot for him, but there's only so much defending I can do.
I thought he played well at center this year, though.
He played okay at center this year.
Played better than he did at guard.
That is true, but he's not playing better at center than McCoy is playing at center.
Well, and that's the whole argument, is that what you end up with is if you move him out, you have a slightly your guard position gets a little bit better, but then your center position, while Ruiz plays better, the center position as a whole decreases, and then you end up with two positions that aren't that great. So
exactly. And I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago when he first started struggling. It's, you know, you have a guy who is elite, and I think McCoy is an elite center, one of the top two or three that are in this league. And if you move him out of that position, he might be a good guard. Yeah, definitely he might be, but you have a Pro Bowl level elite player at a position. I'm hesitant to change that. You know, I would rather address the guy who's not playing well than move the guy who is.
Dale, you had some comments?
So what's the most important position? To me, that's the question there. I think everybody's leaning towards center being the most important position. I listened to Ross Tucker, it was a few years ago, and he pretty much played like everywhere on the offensive line. And his opinion is the right guard position is the most important position. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, Craig, what do you think about that?
I mean, the guys who get paid the most are left tackle, protecting the blind spot. But in my experience, at least, center is the hardest to be good at. There are a lot of guys who can be good serviceable guards, but there's very few people who can be really good centers because there's so much more to it. You know, guards and centers do the same job physically, but the center's job is so much more mentally and, you know, fundamentally. There's a lot of extra on top of it. So in my opinion, you want to build that inside out. That's how our blocking schemes work. That's how you build everything. With the exception of left tackle, who gets paid obscene amounts of money to protect the blind side, I think it's center.
Mm. Okay.
And that's why I don't want to move McCoy out of it, because he's real good at it.
I'm thinking about prior lines, right? Like Jahri Evans was probably like our best offensive lineman during his peak, during his time, right? Maybe Carl Nix was pretty good during this little run.
Nix was excellent.
Yeah.
It was short lived, but yeah, he was very good.
And Nix in his prime was a bulldozer.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry, guys. I kind of fell asleep talking about Craig and offensive linemen. Where were we? So anyway.
Yeah, the problem is we have no idea now whether a switch between those two players would be a net negative or a net positive, you know. So Ruiz is either going to have to get it at guard, or the Saints are going to have to figure out, you know, maybe somebody out there needs a center that, you know, we can make it.
No, I suggested that today. At some point, it's like, listen, if his future's at, the problem is he's not going to get anything for him, because if there's a team that says, I think we need a center and he could probably make a pretty good one, it's not like the Saints are going to be able to negotiate and get something more than a fourth round draft pick from a team that is actually pretty aggressive about it. If they think he has the potential. And then you say, is it worth it? At this point, I kind of feel like, but that's a lot assuming that he's still not going to develop anymore. And we know how that works, man.
Let's revisit that draft, because.
Oh, here we go. Yeah.
Right, I know after him, Brandon Ayuk got selected, you know, a few picks later, Patrick Queen, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, T. Higgins, Michael Pittman.
You notice he's talked about two LSU guys already.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, look, this is where they make great players. You might want to get one of them, you know.
All right. Well,
that's hindsight. I mean, are we going to talk about how nobody picked Tom Brady for six rounds? I mean, we're going to talk about Marcus Colston falling in the seventh round. I mean, it's the draft. It's a crapshoot, man. You know, sometimes you have the 2017 draft and sometimes you have the 2020 draft. I mean, they're at least break even at this point, right?
All right.
I can tell you right now that the Bengals want to upgrade their center position. I wonder if they trade this T. Higgins straight off.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Well, hey, he was drafted after him, right? So,
yeah, I mean, yeah.
Makes Henderson perfect sense. stop it with your Trey Henderson talk. Let's talk about some positive stuff. The defense played very well. One of the things that I was expecting was that, they would play solid. I don't think Miami's offense is super scary, but what I was most concerned about is that eventually there was no depth and that they would get worn down, especially with the pass rush. Marcus Davenport is, listen, y'all know I've been a huge fan of him for years, and now the rest of you are catching up. Had a huge play, strip sack, or if you want to call it a strip sack, but he forced the ball out. I mean, he's our best pass rusher at this point, and he's a fantastic run defender. But the guy that I really want to mention is, because Cam Jordan found the fountain of youth. Why? It must be in whatever they giving you when you catch COVID did something to his genetics, man. He's now an X-Man.
Chicken soup and Powerade. Turn him into a superhero.
Bottle it, man. Sell it. Cause he's, listen, Heath, did you notice?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he came back last week and looked great, you know, and he looked spry and quick again this week, like he hasn't looked in a while. And so I don't know what it really is. It certainly wasn't just the 1 week off. I don't know if it did something with his attitude, or, you know, he just decided when I come back, I'm tearing it up, or maybe he was really annoyed by it, you know, or whatever the case may be. But yeah, I mean, he's, you know, really, I mean, the defense did a fantastic job, especially when you consider that they weren't at 100% either. And like you already said, the factor of whether they were going to wear down playing so much when the offense was three and out, you know, over and over and over again, or even less, one and out when you throw a pick six or whatever. But you can't say enough good about the defense right now. And I'd like to point out Werner, you know, he really played well yesterday for stepping in and trying to change into the middle linebacker. And you know, he wasn't perfect and everything, but he showed, you know, what he hit, how he looked early in the season before Quan Alexander. You know, it's funny how we've talked about this in the past, you know, early in the season when Werner was playing, we're like, oh man, this guy's pretty good. And then Quan Alexander comes back. And he goes back to the bench and you're like, yeah, you know, this dude's in another league. Like, right. You know, but then, you know, so I was interested to see Werner come back and play a lot last night, especially happen to change position and make the calls and all of that kind of stuff. And I thought he did well. And so, and Bond even, you know, he wasn't great, but he certainly didn't look like the one game we saw him in earlier this season when it looked pretty bad.
Yeah.
He looked more like preseason Bond, you know, so I think he accounted for himself pretty well.
Yeah, he's obviously a lot better than when we wrote him off last season. You know, he is developing, you know, from being Bane, not really a linebacker, to whatever he is now. He's at least coming along. I don't want him to start anytime soon.
Well, the thing about it is, to me, is he had some slow reactions to boots and things and waggles that got outside the pocket, but he played. Oh God. He had some good plays, but I just remembered the one when he got trucked, and I was not expecting that, because Bond has always struck me as a guy that's like, he's that defensive end at heart. And they squeezing him into a linebacker, and you would never expect him. You think that the run game, he'd just be crushing guys, and he just got lit.
And that's what we said about him earlier too, is that, whenever somebody touched him, whenever he got near a tackle, it was just the guy was just down.
Yeah, yes.
And I gave tackle. We talked about it on the show.
Yeah, I gave him credit for that. It's like, man, he seems like, as far as run stopping goes, he's a big, tough middle linebacker. But I think that what it makes me feel good about is that even though his development has been slow, which you would expect, look, man, the dude was a defensive end. So then they move him not just to outside linebacker, but they move him to inside linebacker, completely different position. And you would expect, with no offseason, with no preseason, that he didn't do very well his rookie year. I'm just looking for continued development, because what we saw last night is a glimpse into the future at linebacker. You know, between Bond and Werner, that's going to be your middle linebackers, hopefully, because if he keeps developing, he will be. But if Bond doesn't, then now we're back looking for a linebacker when our two starters retire or move on with injuries. Dell, any more thoughts, or either about the linebackers, just the defense in general?
Yeah, I'm worried Bond is gonna hit the transfer portal. once the other guys come back, you know, you're gonna get tired of being on a bench. But yeah, I was also surprised to see my guy Bane get run over. Bane. You know, you don't run over Bane, okay?
No, Bane.
I swear, looking at that play, I still can't figure out the physics of it, because I don't really know how that running back trucked him like that. I really don't. The mass alone should have prevented that from happening. So it's like you look at it and it just, I still can't explain it. You know, I look at the hit and I'm like, I have no idea how he literally stopped dead in his tracks and went back like that. And running back kept going, almost like he didn't touch anything.
No, he just ran right over and kept going. He didn't stumble over him. I always tell this story in high school football. Do y'all remember Derek Ned? He played for the Saints a long time ago. It was more of a guy that came in when everybody was injured. I played against him in high school, and I remember playing defensive end. And I was playing outside linebacker at the time, and I stepped down and, you know, did everything the coach taught me, and here he comes. And I'm like, boom, I go right for his, you know, about knee height. And all I remember is my head hitting his knee and then my head hitting the ground. And when I woke up and rolled over, he was still running. Juki, he's moving left. He's moving right. I watched the video. All I did was like slam straight to the ground. He kept going, and like I wasn't even there. And that's what that reminded me of, is he didn't even slow down. He didn't even slow down. So anyway, I don't know. I think we look, unless you guys have some other topics. First of all, I would imagine there are not going to be many people, you know, beating down the door to download many podcasts this week. I'm sure most people are chalking this up as like another one that you throw in the trash because you can't learn anything from it. So let's talk a little bit more and wrap the show up with what happens going forward. I'm going to start with Craig. We have two games left, two winnable opponents, beatable opponents. And there's still a door that's open for us to get into the playoffs, despite what Dale just said moments ago. Let's act like that what didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, has anybody ever missed Taysom Hill as much as they did?
Wow, yesterday? Good point.
I've been a big proponent of his for a long time, but when you looked at, you know, Ian Book is very mobile for, you know, for what he is, but with the long way the line was, you just needed a guy who could just tuck it and go. And for the first time all season, I was thinking, man, Taysom Hill would be so much better than what I'm seeing right now. Yeah, the next two games are winnable. We're going to get our guys back. All these COVID protocols for asymptomatic players are going to blow over. We're going to get our guys back. We got two of them back today. We have, I think it's Jenkins and somebody else. Harris was activated from his suspension, still on the COVID list. That'll change in the next day or two. I expect us to win the next two. I expected us, if we were healthy, I think we would have beat the Dolphins. It's frustrating that the team is laid out by injury and then it's laid out by COVID and everything is stacking against us just to beat us down. And you were still in it and we're still in the conversation with everything that has gone wrong. We were misplaced by a hurricane. We had massive injuries to starting quarterbacks and starting linemen, and our best receiver hasn't played this season. Our best running back was out. Our second best running back was out. We're going through everything you can go through, and we can still make the playoffs. It's just remarkable. We used to talk about how Drew Brees, that his floor was 7 wins. We were always going to win 7 wins if we had Drew Brees. I don't think it's Brees anymore. Now I think it's Sean Payton. No matter what we roll out there, we're going to win 7 games. So yeah, all y'all who want a good draft pick, just pick a different team. We're never going to pick better than 13, 14, because we're always going to win 7+ games. It's just how the team is coached, how they draft, how the guys play. I mean, yeah, I think that we back into the playoffs. I think we go 9-8, and I think we get in. So if you want a good draft pick, that's probably not great news for you. I mean, I'm not saying we're going to go in and wreck shop like the Giants as a wild card or anything like that, but I mean, there's still reason for hope. That there's a lot of good players, you know, that are under contract going into next season. I'm not ready to be depressed about this. Yeah, we knew this game was going to be hard. We didn't have a team. I'm ready for next week. I'm ready for next season. I at no point does our showing with a bunch of practice squad guys and guys that were signed the same day they played, none of that's going to get to me, because that's not the Saints. And we say it every week now, but it's still true. We're playing with scrubs and we're still hanging in there. We're still scoring points. We scored more points with Ian Book and day one signers than Tom Brady scored last week.
Well, okay, Dell, any other thoughts about going forward these next two games?
Well, right now, my number one concern is my fantasy team. And I need Kamara to score some points so I can win his consolation bracket championship. Okay, because the consolation championship matters to me. Okay, and I need to win. So hopefully that's going to happen. But yo, still on fantasy, I mean, Cam Jordan was amazing in fantasy. He got like 17 points. He put a friend of mine in the championship game. So, you know, congrats to him and everything.
All right, Heath, and I'm kind of, if I'm not completely attentive, I have the playoff simulator here, and I'm getting something. I'm not getting this
Dell like hate. What he sees.
No, I'm getting some good stuff. I'm not getting Dell hate. Go ahead, Heath, the rest of the season here. What are we going to do? We have two games left. Playoffs, no playoffs. What's best?
Yeah, I mean, what I would say at this point, you know, you always hear this expression, hopefully we're peaking at the right time of the season, you know. And by peaking in this case, I'm talking about actually having all of your players, or at least most of them. Even most of them would be a high thing, you know, mark for the Saints this year. No hurricanes, you know, a meteorite doesn't come down and hit the facility on Veterans Highway or whatever. You know, I mean, on airline. Look, it almost can't get any worse, right? There's almost no place for it to go but up from here. And so we got two games. You know, the ending schedule here winds up being favorable for us. I know we lost to both of these teams, but neither one of these teams are very good either. And we have Carolina at home, I think, and then at Atlanta, if I remember correctly.
That's
and,
right.
You know, so, man.
I worry about playing at home, though.
Well, yeah, dome sweet dome is not a thing right now anymore.
Oh,
but,
gone.
But there are, you know, a lot of the same reasons that we've just been talking about is somewhat responsible for that as well. But we got to get our people back, man. We got to get our people back and go out there and get it done. And I think they're certainly capable. If we get our people back, at least to the point we were last week, and we can do that to Tampa, and we can certainly beat Carolina and Atlanta and take care of our part of the equation. And then we just got to see how the rest of it shakes out. You know, we need some help, but there's nothing we can do about that.
All right. So I'm going to tell the truth to our listeners, not like Dell. And I'm going to lay it out for you. Week 17, the 49ers, I have them beating the Texans. So I'm not trying to create an unrealistic situation. 49ers beat Texans. Okay. Cause we need the 49ers to lose, but they're not going to lose to the Texans. The big game is Green Bay over the Vikings, okay? So if the Green Bay beats the Vikings, that we need that. And then I also have the Eagles beating Washington. Those are the three games that are key with the teams that we need to lose. And I have two of the three winning, not losing. So now move on to week 18. We would need the Rams to beat the 49ers. Then we need the Cowboys over the Eagles. So that means the Eagles would still go 1-1. No. Yeah, 1-1 the rest of the way. And that's the two big games. Now, I will say, you're talking about week 18, if the Rams and the Cowboys, there are situations where they may not need to win and may not play to win. So that's the only thing I would worry about. But again, I wouldn't expect the Texans to beat the 49ers. Really, even without Garoppolo, I don't see the Texans beating the 49ers. I do expect Green Bay to beat the Vikings, and I would not see, although I've seen crazier things, Washington can beat the Eagles. It's not like the Eagles are so good that they can't be beat by Washington. So I would say there's still a chance out there looking at this. Again, the one thing that would really be frustrating is I definitely see the Rams beating the 49ers, and I see the Cowboys beating the Eagles. The problem is, it's the last week of the season. And for whatever reason, depending on how it shakes out, those two teams who should beat the teams we need them to beat may decide they don't need to win that week. And that's what would be frustrating. So, but hey, it gives you some hope.
Like that.
Huh? And the Texans beat the Chargers. Yes. This weekend. So
how many seasons have ended with us hoping that the Lions or somebody would beat the Packers?
Well, okay. So I used this earlier in the season. I mean, we're always trying to get that number one seed. So towards the end of the year, we're hoping, oh man, if somehow Detroit can beat the Packers. And it's frustrating because for whatever reason, Detroit seems to always just hang in there. They get like a 2-touchdown lead from an interception return or something. And then they end up losing. But now we're hoping for the better team to beat the lesser team. So it seems more doable. But this is the NFL. I mean, especially that last week of the season is so unpredictable. But on paper, I look at that as favorable, you know. But Heath brought it up, and it is the fact, and we talked about it for quite a while. Are the Saints going to take care of business? And that's the thing that I'm just not confident in. I mean, Taysom Hill, we've seen things where it's like, oh, we beat Tampa Bay. Taysom Hill could have very easily thrown an interception that game. He's very capable of having a fumble. He's capable of doing things that could get you beat on the wrong day. So it's, but you know, hey, if we this far down the line, man, I'm hoping for that, that extra playoff game is
only on this show. Can we bash Taysom Hill on weeks he doesn't even play?
I'm simply saying, look, you just said it too. He's capable of beating us just as much as he's capable.
Yeah, he is.
So, anyway,
you know what? One other thing that's really interesting, we added an extra game this year, and the bar to get into the playoffs is about the same or possibly even lower this year than it was in the past. You'd think the bar would have gotten higher. You know, right. You need to win even more another game, and now you're going to have teams getting in at 9-8, maybe even 8-9 or something. You know,
it's worked the opposite. Now you can lose one more game and still make the playoffs. Yeah,
not what I expected.
Good. We're in that situation.
Yeah. Well, after it doesn't work in our favor, then we're going to demand it be changed or the NFL screwing us. So, all right. Well, anyway, that's about, I guess, about all the show that we have for you. Anyway, for Heath Elson-San, for Craig Wright, Dell Mims, the great one, Tomas Mauricio. I'm Dave Romero. You've been listening to the BS and Beer podcast on a terrible week. And I hope that hello. Is anyone out there? I hope somebody actually downloads the show this week. We'll talk to you next week after we rip off another win.
And anyway, the person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists, writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not going away. I'll be back.
And that's the way it is.
Hope I don't waste time to tune into our podcast. Oh, go give your time to Davey, Heath, and Tomas. We do this every week. Everyone is a so don't miss. We do this every week. Everyone is a so don't miss. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Oh, we have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast, oh, but I don't waste time.